It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast, Tottenham Hotspur 1, Newcastle United 1, on a Sunday afternoon where anything seemed possible apart from a Newcastle goal. But a goal we got, a point we got. You've got Alex Hurst, Ben Wade and Charlotte Robinson to talk you through what on earth happened and where this ridiculous football club go from here. Going to kick things off with a little reminder for all you listeners. Brand new issue of True Faith Fanzine. It only costs £2.50 plus postage and packaging. We'll also do a £1.50 digital issue as well. If you'd like to read it, there's only one of them. There's only one paper fanzine left. I personally will post it to you anywhere in the world, as long as Royal Mail goes there. And it's within our budget and postage restrictions. So consider buying it if you haven't. Thanks to everyone who has bought it. Another record day of sales over the weekend. It's been tough going because all the shops have got no one in them. So we've lost out big time on those sales. And to keep it alive, I need lots of people to buy it. So that would be Champion. There is a link in the description of this. And if you follow us at TFNUFC or you follow me, you've probably been spammed already with it. So I'll stop talking about it, but please buy it. Right, we went to Spurs and on the back of a hearty win at Morecambe. And, you know, I think discussion pre-game was about, would any of those lads force their way into the team? How would Bruce set up after the horror show against Brighton? And I think even the kind of most negative Newcastle fan, and of course I'm talking about Simon Campbell, would have been hard-pressed to predict the absolute dominance that Spurs displayed in that first half, and the fact that I had 13 shots or something, Dubravka. He reminds me of Dubravka. Carl Darlow produces like literally four saves. In the free kick, great save, but the rebound from Kane and the one where Kane has the header, Kane should score both of those. I think Darlow does great, but shit, Kane, he doesn't get ever criticised ever about anything, Harry Kane. He should score those. So that's how good a saves they were, and the game should have been out of sight by half time. We're going to get right into it. We're going to get into the penalty. We're going to get into the one or two good performances. I think I referenced half of the good performances. And we're going to talk about VAR and all that. But Ben, I want to bring you in first because I want to get right into what the fuck we witnessed in the first 45 in particular. And it was just like you were sending me WhatsApps, Ben. You're absolutely foaming, you know, with the way Bruce set the team up. And it's like, I feel like we're doing the same podcast that we did after we got humped 5-0 by Man City in April, when we seemed to have set the team up to give the opposition the maximum amount of possession and chances to score. It's almost like, right, we'll want the opposition to maybe be 5-0 up at halftime, lads. This is how I want you to set up. How did you say it?
It's bizarre, isn't it? I'd love to know what Bruce thought. It was almost like, It's almost like goading them. Come on then, like punches as hard as you can type of thing. I don't really understand what he thought was going to happen in playing that, especially given that he came out himself and criticised the five at the back as not working on numerous occasions last season. He loves to chuck it out there every now and again just to remind everybody how tactically inept we have become. I mean, starters, when you've got an injury crisis, particularly at centre halves, you don't want to get as many centre halves on the pitch as you can. So starting Isaac Hayden as a third centre back was just an absolute bizarre decision. I think he's obviously trying to match them up, I'm guessing, one on one for their front three, but Isaac Hayden is not a centre-back and basically was left out, hung out to dry a bit, I think, being asked to play that centre-back role. And it basically we got what he deserved in terms of it was a complete dominant display from Spurs where we didn't press anyone up to the halfway line so that their centre-backs and their ball-playing midfielders, playmakers were able to just come and get the ball easy, no problem. Look up, have all the time they will to then pick the pass they want. And even then, when the ball was coming at the box, there wasn't really any pressure on the player receiving the ball. There was a couple of moves where Spurs played some nice sort of one-touch football around where, but there's absolutely nobody like looking to get any pressure on them. When you think the whole point of playing five at the back is to crowd space, make sure that they're they're oppressed when the ball comes in and make it difficult and make them have to have it the perfect touch. There was just none of that, and it just led to, as you say, Spurs v Darlow for the first 45, and it was just, to be honest, it would have served Weir right to be 5 or 6 nil down at half time. Bruce's look, I mean, I don't know, is he Irish or something? He must have some sort of Irish heritage or something.
Is that why he bought Jeff Henrick?
Probably. just add a little bit more. I'd love to know what he's thinking there. The lottery numbers are going to be, because he's looked last season and carrying on this season at times. Is ridiculous. And it was just an embarrassment. I think Brighton was really, really poor. Obviously got off to a terrible start. And to be honest, we could have been in exactly the same situation, like 2-0 down inside the first 5 minutes. Wouldn't have been a shock again. And I don't quite understand what he's trying to go for there, in terms of if he's got a plan, the players didn't have a clue what it was, and somebody's got to take the brunt of that, and unfortunately it's got to be Bruce. It was just a dire 45 minutes, and it was so lucky that it was only 1-0 at half time.
I'd love to see the post game analysis of the start of the game. I assume they watched the matches back, at least the highlights or key moments. The first 20 seconds against West Ham, Andy Carroll assaulted someone and got away with it. The first 20 seconds against Brighton, we basically gave away a pen and lost the game. And then the first 20 seconds, yeah, Jonjo Shelvey brings down a player, like, from behind, scythes him down to give away like a direct free kick, like 18 yards from goal. Like, talk about starting badly and setting the tone for the rest of the game. You know, I am going to get into the tactics a little bit, but Charlotte, Is there a valid opinion? Well, there is an opinion out there. Is it valid that, you know what, going away to a top six side, getting a point is far more relevant and far more important in terms of how you got it? Because I am seeing that kind of thing. Not lots of it, but I'm seeing it kind of stop whinging. We've got a point. How many times have we been away to top six sides in the past however many years and just got beaten comfortably, and we've got a point, and something should be said for that?
It's not my job. I can't say if it's valid or not to have that opinion. I think if I'd just seen the scoreline and not the game, I think if that had been the case, I would have been like, oh, brilliant, a point at Spurs, away at Spurs. Like, that's excellent. I was not expecting that. 4 points from 3 games. After a performance like the one we put in at Brighton. But I did watch the game, and I can't really argue with the fact that a point is a good thing. If your aim here for the season is to just avoid relegation, then fine, yeah, that is good. It's not bad form so far. But I mean, I said it on the preview podcast that we did with Craig Hope. I think we all said it. We're looking for, like, better football or some kind of identity in our team. And I did not see that yesterday. I didn't see better football. As Ben said, it should have been like 5 or 6 nil up at halftime. I can see that point. I can see, in theory, yeah, a point away at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is a good thing. But I think it was just so lucky that we got it, that it still feels like I'm still worried about our season. I think I was supposed to be positive about this, and I have not been able to be.
I would never tell you one way or the other how to feel, Charlotte. Feelings are your own, and we're here to talk about them on this True Faith podcast. The thing about this game yesterday is it was a bit like Brighton, and I wasn't on the show for Brighton last week. George Culkin very kindly stepped in as the free podcast guest. We were supposed to have Andy Griffin tonight, but he couldn't make it, so he's doing a patron show tomorrow instead. If you think Roy Keane is harsh on modern footballers, you want to listen to Andy Griffin. I cannot wait for him to absolutely tear into this. He doesn't mix his words. We'll get him on a free show soon But it's like, you know, when the Brighton team sheet was announced and Andy Carroll was playing, and it was just like, right, here we go. This is how it's going to be. This is mental. When he picked that formation, two things stood out. Well, number one, like Jonjo Shelvey in midfield, which we're going to come on to with Ben. And number two was, well, two out of three actually, playing Matt Ritchie at left back ahead of Wilson. Where does the goal come from Matt Ritchie at left back? It's a dreadful selection.
Do you mean Lewis?
I mean Lewis.
I was going to say, Wilson at left back probably would have been, I don't think he would have conceded.
He would have got more of the ball. Yeah. If you played left back. Sorry, Lewis. I was thinking about Wilson at the same time because he's just brilliant. But we're going to talk about that later as well. But also this decision, like Ben alluded to before, to play five at the back. Like, we've done this, Steve. We've done it. Like, we did this last season where we went away from home and played with five defenders, three centre-backs and two. What used to be wing-backs but are just defenders now. And it's just gone so horrifically wrong that you had to completely tear up the whole tactical imprint of the season in a massive gamble in March to try and save the season. And it worked. So we did the right thing. Yet we've gone back to it. And I had a look at the stats. I tweeted this during the game yesterday. The last four away games before yesterday. So these stats don't even include yesterday. The last four away games, playing that formation with these players, most of these players, Newcastle have had four shots on target in four games. That's one a game, which, to be fair, is better than we've managed so far this season. the opponents have had 28 shots on target across those games. So those stats will be even worse now because of the game yesterday. Mm. Before yesterday, in the last four games playing this formation away from home, we'd scored none. The opponents had scored 10. We'd won none of those games. And bear in mind, you know, yeah, we played Arsenal and Palace and Man City in these, I'm including these in these games, but also played Brighton and Palace, two teams that I think were finished above last season.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when Steve Bruce is setting up, if I'm a player in that situation and I hear we're going to go back to this formation, I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to do differently to those four horror shows? Now, the only one which wasn't a horror show, that was probably Brighton away, was a terrible, terrible game. But it did go better than Brighton at home. So, you know, maybe that was part of the thought process. I'd probably think we were so open against Brighton. That also influenced the manager's decision. But the fact is, this is what I don't feel is touched on enough by professionals and pundits. I mean, like on Sky and stuff like that, like when they're talking about formations. And like, we play this formation, you assume, to be more defensively solid. Yet when we play this formation, we get worse defensively. Like, doesn't make any sense at all. Like, and like I say, surely someone's got to put their hand up at the back of the room. I don't know. I'll pick, like, who, you know, Isaac Hayden, because he speaks his mind, as we've seen on the pitch. Surely he's got to say, what we're going to do differently from the last time this didn't work? And, like, you know, what would the answer be to that? Because, like Ben said at the start of the show, we've got a point, but we've gone away to Spurs, and we've been unbelievably easy to play against. It's almost been like a dream. And you have to give credit that in the second half, I thought Spurs massively stepped off the gas. But also, you have to give credit to Newcastle for that, because it was one-way traffic in the first half. Spurs still could have scored a couple in the second half, but Newcastle were in the game. Bruce correctly changed the formation, and that worked. Obviously, it worked, because it couldn't get any worse. And we did, even though we absolutely didn't pressure the Spurs goal whatsoever, we were at least in the game, whereas in the first half, it was almost like, what am I doing with my Sunday here, watching this absolute nonsense? I think the concerning thing for me is just like, we've done this, we've been through this. Like, the point of last season was like, right, new manager, came in late, didn't really have a transfer window, doesn't really know the players. That, you know, he's had three transfer windows now. Every single one of those players was either signed by him or given a new contract under him yesterday. I think Jamal Lascelles is the only one who hasn't signed a new contract under him. But, you know, it's not like he doesn't want him in the team. So, like, I would just love to have some justification. And it's, yeah, I get it. And I appreciate Steve Bruce's honesty after the game, saying we're dreadful. I get it. You're right. Spot on. Same as he was right when we played the same way against Manchester City. Spot on, Steve. You've called it spot on. But what is going to be if we get Spurs away? Yeah, if we get Spurs away in the quarterfinal of the league and the semi final of the League Cup or the quarterfinal of the League Cup, assuming we beat Newport, which I think we will, what will be different? Like we never seem to learn. There doesn't seem to be like any introspection into how shit we are so much of the time.
Yeah, it seems. Sorry,
go on, Charlotte.
I butt into you. Sorry, it seems like it's almost just easier to say sorry after you've done something wrong than to just not do it at all or you know learn from it.
Yeah, and I made the point. I'm going to come to you in a second, Ben. I made the point during the game yesterday. It's my fault. I deserve everything that's coming to me because my mentions on Twitter just for 24 hours straight have been like the pro Rafa and anti Rafa lobby. Like going at each other just relentlessly. And I mentioned Rafa a bit. I don't think I mentioned Rafa, but I said, I went to Spurs with you, Charlotte, in 2018 at Wembley, second last game of the season. Spurs finished third that year, and we'd just come up that year and we played really well. Got beat 1-0 thanks to a great goal from Harry Kane, but we played really well. We had chances. We definitely deserved a point. We played four at the back. We didn't have loads of the ball. I think we only had about 40% possession, maybe a little bit less. But like, how have we regressed so much that there's no way you could argue, even though we didn't pick a point in that game, we deserve to lose that game or be 4 or 5 goals down at half time. Yet here we are, £100 million plus spent. How have we got so much worse in how we play the game? And we weren't great then, by the way. I'm not trying to... You know, this is the thing. I see this all the time on social media. It's like, oh, we'll play the same as we did under Athens. Like, well, okay, number one, even if you think that was true and you thought that wasn't good enough, what's your justification for it still being shit? And I don't think we do play. I think we're nowhere near as defensively organised and Bruce has better players at his disposal. But that isn't the debate. I'm in dangerous territory here, even bringing it up. I just can't get my head around how we are so bad so consistently. Like, how is there no improvement? And we saw an improvement, by the way, at West Ham on the opening day, but that more and more, well, there's only been 3 games. That looks like the blip. That doesn't look like the norm.
Yeah, it feels like a fluke now, doesn't it?
It does. And West Ham have kind of like, that's obviously terrified West Ham into waking themselves up and just thought, Jesus Christ, comfortably beaten by these lads, something's wrong. Ben, you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say, the only thing I can put it down to is Brucey was showboating. Because he knew it was Jose, and he's got such a terrible record against the two, and it was like, we'll give you the first 45 minutes. Do what you can, but we're gonna like snake it at the end, no matter what. But yeah, it's just there's too many. As you say, you've made some really good points there. Like, hey, Brucey, you talk about him being honest, and it's great that he comes out and recognise it. But he would come out publicly like many times last season and berate this formation and say, I'm stuck with these players. I'm stuck with this formation. This is how they've been taught to play for the last few years. So I'm stuck with it, but it's not how I want to play. And I don't think it works, basically. And he came out regularly with that sort of commentary at times. And yet he now keeps going back to it. And it's like, he saw it didn't work last year. And yes, it did work under the previous person who we're not going to mention. But things have so far moved on from that now. It's the players have forgotten everything they learned under that, and now with Bruce Ball, it's as you say, like the players have got to be questioning, thinking, bloody hell, like as if we're going back to this. He comes out and says regularly, this is not the way we want to play. Why does he keep going to that? And surely, as you say, we've had some hammerings in that formation. Like, at some point, is he not going to take a bit of it? Well, it wouldn't even be a gamble, but just have, like, do you know what? Like, yes, if we played four at the back and we could get a hammering, but it's no worse than what should be happening in this formation. We got away with one, and it's out of sheer luck and just how poor Spurs are potentially playing at the minute. That we didn't get a hiding, and really, it kind of not. Obviously, I would never want Newcastle to get beat, but I wonder if we had have got a real stuff in like a 6-0, which it could have been, as I said. I don't know. Would that have been like the final nail in that coffin of that five at the back to finally get it through his head that is not the way this team can play in his in the way that he wants to try and play the football. Because if he keeps going back to it, as you say, you can see him doing it again, repeating it. As you say, if we get to a big game in a cup or something like that, he did it against Man City last season and completely threw, basically. I mean, it was obviously always going to be an uphill battle, but that was basically the equivalent of throwing a game. If he does that again, like it's just what is the point?
No, definitely. And I think it was basically two games in the post-lockdown football last season against Man City, which we went back to this formation for, and both of them were a horror show. But the away game in particular, which, like, infamously Steve McManaman, after like praising Steve Bruce for non-stop for 80 minutes, says after 80 minutes, this could be 10. And it's like, not playing, and I want to move on from the formation really quickly after this, but not playing the formation, like, doesn't fix everything. And to be fair, you can play that formation and you don't have to just let the other team have the ball. Like, you can press them up the halfway line, you can get your fullbacks forward, you can make sure that you pick the right players in the right positions, rather than, like, when you've got no centre backs, like you said, Ben, picking an extra centre back in the team or a centre back spot so your best defensive midfielder has to play out of position. Like, no one forces these things on him or his management team, but, like, you know, after that Man City, off both of those Man City games, but the away game in particular, like, nothing seems to have changed. And one of the most frustrating things for me is I'm talking about, like, tactical setups against Man City and Spurs, like, they're remotely similar as teams. Like, they're just not. Spurs finished sixth last season. Like,
only just.
With a couple of wins.
Level on points with Wolves, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, Ben, me and you were talking about this earlier. This surely was an opportune time to play Spurs. Would you agree?
100%. I mean, the fact that they've literally been to the arse end of Europe twice this week, Bulgaria and North Macedonia, where apparently they were playing with different sized goals and all sorts of shenanigans, ridiculous patter. I mean, talk about...
I love that from the Macedonians.
I know, talk about conspiracies and everything, ridiculous. But that and to be honest, it's not as if he's rotating the team that much either. It was just that surely was a game to press them and to test their legs. Like, the fact that they're a ridiculous amount of travel, played three times already this week. I know we played obviously Morecambe, but not all the lads play that. That was surely an opportunity to get into them, and especially that they're not in good form, like they're not playing well. I think it was one of those where he's respected the names on the team sheet rather than looking at how they're actually playing. As you say, Harry Kane's missed some great chances in that game. He's not particularly in his top form. He's obviously got a lot of assists so far this season, but he's actual finishing. He's not banging in the chances that you'd expect him to, and we saw that Darlow, as you mentioned before, made some great saves. And defensively, they're all over the shop. Like, he's playing Eric Dier at centre back. He's got midfielders that he doesn't trust in Lo Celso and Ndombele, that he doesn't seem to have a preferred position or a preferred sort of team with those lads, and there was opportunities there for us to actually to sort of take advantage of a bit of I wouldn't say a bit of a there's obviously issues going on. I mean, the whole thing with Dele Alli, he's been sacked off. You've seen the stuff with Danny Rose that's been going on. It wouldn't surprise us if there is a bit of tension in the background, and that was the type of opportunity there where early on in the season they've not had a great start, they've been travelling all over. We could have really frustrated them, and as you say, it's not just purely down to the formation; it's the actual the tactics that he implemented and the plans that he put there. I mean, Christ, it didn't look like there was a plan. None of the players seemed to be playing to. If there was a plan, none of the players seemed to be playing to it. So. It was just a real opportunity where this Spurs, I mean, God's sake, we beat them last year with Joe Linton's only goal in the game in the first half of the season. Sorry, it's just like they're not, as you say, they're not a Man City. They've got some great players and we made them look like that in the first half. But I just think that was an opportunity where we could have made it really, really difficult for them, and we've let them off. We've made them look amazing. And yet still, we've taken a point off them, which is just mind-boggling.
Charlotte, we could beat Burnley next Saturday. It's not outside the realms of possibility. We should beat Newport.
Mm-hmm.
That would leave us in October going into an international break in the quarterfinals of a domestic cup competition in the top 10 of the Premier League, if not the top 8.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think this is some sort of like witchcraft that has got us here? What do you think, actually, you put enough decent players in the team, like a Callum Wilson, who will come on to, and actually, it might just be okay?
I think it's a mixture. I think Steve Bruce is the luckiest man in the whole world. I mean, we could be, couldn't we? We could be, like, having our best season on paper in like, many seasons' time, couldn't we? I struggle to think, I don't want to sound like Simon on this podcast, but I struggle to think that, you know, throw a few good players in the team and we're going to be fine. I cannot get behind that theory. Like, there has to be, that will be debunked very quickly when we start getting a couple of injuries, or when we start, you know, when you can see how we lost ASM yesterday for yesterday's game, and I think that had a massive impact on the quality of our forward game. So I don't think that putting good players in the squad is just make everything okay. But, you know, having said that, everybody, you know, Alex and I were talking about it, and he was like, do you think people should just shut up because top 10 and being in a quarter final is good? That does excite me. The fact that we might be on a cup run excites me. But I don't think it's an overreaction to still be worried about the state of our side. Does that make sense? Because if we do beat Burnley, we're in a really great position, but I'm still a little bit worried about it.
I actually said, should we shut up? Not people, us.
Yeah, but I don't read that.
Yeah, people as well. No, you're right, and it's like Newcastle United this season could be one of those like Christmas cards at Christmas that shows a really happy family. All hate each other. Like, that could be us, that, like, to the outside world, when we finish ninth, if we finish ninth playing this season, it's just going to be horrific.
Yeah, but we get this like quite a lot though, don't we? Like, we finish, you know, 12th, 13th, and my, you know, friends and colleagues who don't support Newcastle are like, what are you whinging about? Like, that's good. I'm like, it's not good enough. It's not ambitious, and it's just absolutely on cruise control, like nothing about it, and we never get there that easily. So, yeah, I think outside looking in, yeah, it's like that Christmas card image, but I can't get behind it as like actually everything's great and fine.
No, definitely not. And I think if any of your friends and colleagues want to, you know, if you want to punish them at all, just make them watch the first 45 minutes of that game on loop. If you want to torture someone.
Or Brighton.
Or Brighton. That would be, at least Brighton were good, though. Like, Brighton were good.
That's
true. It was shambolic from us, but Brighton were good. 3 cheers for Brighton. Well done, man. Spurs weren't good. Like, Spurs were a disgrace in the second half. And Ben made I meant to say this before, Ben. You made a really good point. You know, I'm saying well done the team for doing it better in the second half. Spurs collapsed in the second half, like you say, 5,000 miles done in 7 days, plus the farce of having a game called off because of coronavirus and having to train and having to keep yourself fit and healthy. And then we turn up and are just like, here you go, lads, take it easy for the first one. We still should have won the game.
It was almost like a warm up for the warm up and the cool down, wasn't it? It's like, get those 5,000 miles out your legs, lads, have a bit of a runabout. We'll stand off yous, let yous stretch out.
It's like I don't play anymore, Ben. You know this. I know you still play. You play FIFA, but it's like someone in the first half just played with their left hand only, to just let them have the best possible chance to go in 3 or 4 at half time, and then we turned up in the second half.
It was Brucey was showboating.
That's his tactic. So we've
the old rope a dope.
I watched yesterday's match with a Spurs fan, with my friend Tess and her husband, and he's a Spurs fan, and he sort of said, you know, it's typical Spurs, like we're gonna bottle this. You're gonna get an 87th minute winner here. Like we're rubbish. You almost deserve a point. Like I can't get on board with us deserving a point from yesterday's show, but they were rubbish. So you are right.
There is something infuriating as a football fan about your team pissing away chances. Like I don't know if anyone listening remembers, we played QPR at home in the Championship, and it was just like one of the angriest nights at St James's Park in years, because Perez missed like 3 one-on-ones. People were just getting angry because everyone knew in the ground that QPR were going to score, and Kieran Clarke ended up scoring a last minute ridiculous own goal, which Darlow is also, he's come a long way, even though he's played about one game since. But it was just, so I get it from your Spurs supporting friend's husband. Like, there is just something when you're playing a really bad team, like, how are lads just fucking score again, man? So and turn the telly off and worry about something else for a week, because you kind of have to blame Spurs a bit. And, you know, to be fair to the lads, they've clearly been working all week on Joe Linton throwing himself into someone for a free kick. if anyone hasn't seen that clip, it's on our Twitter, of the free kick that led to the goal. You could argue Doherty is planning to commit a foul, but Joe Linton does something
to it.
Joe Linton would probably be like yellow carded in rugby for that, above the waist, straight into the chest challenge, and we got a free kick out of it.
It's the perfect video. I don't know if people have seen those memes where like someone falls and then they just stop falling through various videos of and like scenes of various things. Like it just goes absolutely flying. He literally launches. It's like a flying headbutt type of thing into the bloke.
Deserved free kick for Newcastle. Jonjo, who we're going to talk about right now, but Jonjo floats it across, and Andy Carroll heads the ball not towards goal, but straight at Eric Dyer's outstretched arm. And like, I don't know about you two, but when you were watching it, as soon as the commentator said there's a VAR check here, I just thought penalty. there's so many penalties these days in the Premier League, you just thought penalty. And when at first they didn't show the replay, at first they went offside, like almost like the lads in the VAR studio, like, desperate not to have a give a pen because of like, have a look for offside. I don't know.
Please, come
on, lads. As if we get men ahead of their back line. ahead of their back line all game. We're not going to start on the 96th minute. And it's a penalty. And then it's just delighted. Duncan is wrong. I'm still really pleased.
Great pen from Wilson. Like,
yeah,
was it? Was it?
It went in, mate. Bottom corner.
I've heard great pen from Wilson. Yeah. Keeper got a pretty big hand to it.
Nah, it was that's how good it was.
No, still
couldn't take it out.
He was probably like something disgusting, like 6 centimetres off the line, even if he had taken it. We wouldn't retaken. I'll tell you what, we'll talk about Wilson now before Ben absolutely slayed Shelby. Wilson has been getting a lot of grief on Tottenham social media today because, unlike Steve Bruce, who did like the very, you know, statesman thing of saying the penalty rules are a disgrace, Spurs have been cheated, Carl Darlow won us the game, got us a point. And Spurs fans are really, really angry at Callum Wilson for just being genuinely buzzing about getting another goal. How much have you been impressed by both the player and the man, Charlotte?
I like him. I love that he did that. Came out and they were like, what do you think of this? And I think he said it was marvellous. Which I just love so much. What a word. I think it's absolutely marvellous. He was like, look, I'm a striker. I want to get a goal on the sheet. Like, that makes me happy. Yeah, I think he's excellent. I think he's a really, really excellent signing. I can see that it must be frustrating for him. And you can see, I mean, he's got loads more skill and ability as that like number nine sort of position than Joe Linton does, but you can see that he's not being fed the ball. He's not getting a lot of opportunity and chances being created for him. But I think he has he has so much potential, and he clearly wants goals. So yeah, I'm pretty impressed by him. I like that it riled everyone up. Like, I like everyone being like, oh, that's ridiculous. Like absolute disgrace. Like, why did you say that and stuff like that? It's like, well, you would. He scored a goal. He got a penalty. You can argue about the handball rule if you want to. I think that's a different question. Let him have it. I really like him.
Brilliant. Totally agree.
Marvellous.
His enthusiasm shines through, doesn't it? And the fact that he referenced missing it was a bad miss against Brighton. It was the opposite to Joe Linton. Do you know what I mean? Well, he did all right in the second half yesterday. He influenced the game at times, which is more than he's done so far. He had a disastrous first half, but so did everyone, apart from Darlow. And it's not fair to compare Joe Linton to Wilson because they're not the same player, even though they were bought to be the same player. And Wilson has a lot of Premier League experience and Joe Linton doesn't. But like, I just feel Wilson takes a bit of responsibility and like he knows he has to score goals for us this season. He was part of a team that he didn't score goals for last season and they end up getting relegated. So he knows that his job is to score goals. And that's just like miles away from what we had for like the 32 games Joe Linton started up front last season.
He also really wants to. And you can tell, like, he knows he has to. He knows that's his job there. But he's very keen to do it as well. Like, I think Joe Linton, in theory, must know that that's his job. But he doesn't seem at all enthusiastic about it. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, his manager has publicly come out and said that he doesn't really want to score goals.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't like scoring goals. That's right.
He has to want to score goals would be a start.
Yeah.
Would be a start, but like being positive for a second, I'm not going to go overboard. You know, a couple of good turns, running with the ball a little bit better, not much end product. He did win that free kick and he wasn't just fouled. He had to engineer that free kick. Fair play to him. you know, we've talked about it a lot. There have been a few false dawns for Joe Linton. Spurs away being one of them last season. Same as Sheffield United at home. Same as the cup goals. You know, it's probably the first time he's put a couple of decent performances together. He was good in the week, in the first half especially, at Morecambe. He was decent yesterday, Sunday, when we're recording this. So, baby steps in that. Baby steps. He still gets nowhere near my first 11. I don't know whether you guys would disagree with that. I doubt it. But yeah, that's like I'm shuffling round the bottom of a very big barrel for some positives from yesterday. and that was one of them.
The needle in the haystack.
Yeah, Ben, Jonjo Shelvey, you're foaming.
Yeah, he's. I don't know where to start, to be honest. He had a really, really poor game against Brighton, and what winds us up is he does these petulant fouls that just gets booked for literally no point. It's not even like a good tactical foul or anything like that. And it kind of just like he's going to get sent off one of these days where he does it too early and then gets a stupid sending off, and it's going to really cost us. We all know what he is. He's a talented player on his game. He can dominate any. Well, not any game, but he can dominate a lot of other Premiership teams. But he's literally like a 1 in 5, or he'll have a few good games a season where you show what he's capable of. But the consistency is just not there. And we saw under the previous manager, he kind of saw through that, and I think got wise to it, and thought actually we would be better as a unit without a player like that in the team, because he can get lazy and he doesn't do as much running as some of the other players. And part of that is just because he's not as athletic as them. And he's obviously got his physical constraints. Comparing him to an Isaac Hayden, who's just a pure athlete. He's obviously not going to be able to do as much running as him, but you can at least still like try, like even when we're in possession. I don't think he's working hard enough to sort of make either the runs forward off the ball or even getting into space so that he can impact games. He's kind of just like a bit of a passenger at the minute, and he's in the team to be the creative spark in that team, to be the playmaker. Like, there's no other reason you play John Trochel. He's not going to be better than Hayden or Hendrick or even one of the Longstaffs in terms of his defensive capabilities. He's in there to be a creative spark, and he's not doing it at all. And it's really, really frustrating. And the biggest, most frustrating thing is the fact that Bruce continues to pick him. There's absolutely no pressure on him. He's got no competition for that spot. And you think that the Longstaffs, who Sean has featured quite a bit in, over the last couple of seasons, ahead of Shelvey, appears to have regressed a bit. But he's, and we've talked a lot about in terms of how a lot of the players seem to be getting worse under Bruce, but Longstaff, Sean isn't even getting opportunities at the minute. And it's really, really frustrating that he keeps playing Shelvey and allowing these sort of 5-6 out of 10s, and 6 is probably too much, to be honest. It just adds nothing to the team, and it actually becomes a detriment when, if you're going to play a plan like he tried to play against Spurs, where you need to be pressing them, you need to be working hard, you need to sort of crowd their space. When you've got somebody that isn't doing that running, then it just completely breaks everything else down, and it's really, really hampering the team. You've got Matty Longstaff, who's just signed a deal, like, unbelievably, considering he seemed to be getting forced out of the club at the back end of last season when he got 5 minutes, if that. Again, he's just dropped off the face of the earth, and God knows where he is in terms of the pecking order. But these are players that could, surely it's worth giving them an opportunity to see if they can try and provide a bit of a spark. What we've got at the minute isn't working. I think part of it is, as well, is the players that he's playing around him. If you'd have told me you'll have Fraser, Almiron and Wilson as a front three, then yes, I can see where Shelvey will have his worth in terms of his range of passing is brilliant, and he could do something. But when it's Joe Linton on the left and Carroll on the right, he's basically got to play an inch perfect pass to either their chest or their head to get anything. It just doesn't work. In terms of his playing, it's really frustrating. The other thing I want to mention was about the fact that he's phasing these players back in, and obviously he's brought Carroll back in as well. These aren't players that are necessarily ingrained in the qualities that we started to really appreciate in this side. And the team that came up from the championship and then survived the last couple of seasons, there was a real fighting spirit. There was a real togetherness, like a team spirit, where they were, as a group, they were greater than the individuals in parts. And you just see someone like that, like these players coming in, where they don't work as hard, and then it starts to have an impact on the rest of the team. And we talk about players regressing. I think that's a part of it. It's the fact that I don't think they're regressing. I think they're just, it's the fact that together as a team, when they worked outworked teams and they were difficult to play against, they looked better. And I think what's happening is you've got a couple of weaknesses in the team that are then exposing the flaws in the individuals, and that's why they look like they're regressing, because they don't look, they're not natural. I mean, you wouldn't say Manquillo wouldn't get in. Maybe a couple of other teams in the Premier League, but he's actually looked really good for Newcastle over the last couple of seasons and really earned his contract. But then you see performances where he's being left out on his own to try and defend, and teams having their way. And it's just, there's too many sort of chinks in this team now where I think we're starting to get exposed. I think it's one of those where, as I say, it's a really fine balance where when you keep allowing players to get away with bang average performances, it's going to have a detrimental impact on the squad morale.
There's a brilliant piece in the New True Faith, totally about the new signings and how they compare statistically to the rest of the players. And it's by John Petrie, and he includes a load of stats from various players. And John Joe Shelvey, per 90 minutes last season, averaged 0.3 tackles. So he's not going to win you the ball back. Is Miguel Almiron going to win you the ball back? Nope. Jeff Hendrick might. Joe Linton, not really. So what the plan was, how were we going to get the ball back yesterday, apart from either picking out the back of the net or Cardiola making a save? I think that's what I agree with your point there yesterday, where Shelvey does have a role to play in this team. This team's top scorer last season. Mm-hmm. But surely, like you say, someone like Sean Longstaff with his legs. I mean, Matty, God knows what's going on with him. You know, he signed a new contract. He's not been seen since, pretty much, which is a real shame, because you obviously want to see him coming through and, you know, improving as a player. If he's not going to play, he needs to go on loan.
He needs opportunities, yeah. He's still a relatively, well, he's still a young lad that needs
really
to be playing. Yeah, he needs to be playing. Week in, week out, he needs to at least be getting opportunities. And it's not going to be making him a better player, not playing any games with the first team. And it's a massive waste of potential there. And I just think, as you say, the thing with Shelvey, he's in there to when we've got the ball, but that's the point, is the pieces around him, we've not got the right team around him either. So it's a waste of a spot if you're going to try and play him, that he's got to make these inch perfect passes. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not. And yeah, this is the thing. I would want to do podcasts and talk about other stuff than, you know, why the team selection was wrong, why the formation was wrong. And Steve Roos made a point in the week before the Morecambe game that he's only being criticised because we got beat, which is a really strange thing to say. Because, yeah, that's, you know, when you get absolutely humiliated by a team like Brighton, who we finished above for the past 30 years or something, however many years, you know, there has to be some sort of introspection. That's what worries me, and I mean this genuinely, and I would love to be wrong, but where is there the introspection that goes on to think, Jesus Christ, we got this wrong? Like, because that was the case after Brighton, definitely the case yesterday when we played a knackered team who basically only had about 50 minutes in the tank. And you know, the way we played was, if you're a Spurs player, just like if you're a Brighton player, if you ask those players and their management teams, what do you want to face today? Basically, we want to face a team that doesn't press us on the ball at all, leaves plenty of spaces between the lines, and allows us to run with the ball to the edge of the box. And we'll be able to get crosses, we'll be able to get balls in, we'll get play balls through the channels, and we'll basically just get chances. Like, we are a dream to play against, and I appreciate we've got a point, and I'm delighted we've got a point. It was hilarious. I didn't think we could top the undeserved hilarious point that we got at Everton, but we did. So we're breaking records every week, and that's great. But I'd rather we just put in a competent performance, and the lads on the pitch had some semblance of a clue of what's going on. And I hate to say this, because you know, everyone listening, most people listening will know how much I hate Aston Villa. But you look at a team like Aston Villa, our rivals. You look at a team like Brighton, our rivals. You look at a team like Leeds. Everyone in those teams, when you watch them play this season, every one of those players seems to know where they're supposed to stand, know where they're supposed to run. There are partnerships all over the pitch with those teams. Those teams, the pass and move. These aren't teams, these aren't Spurs. This isn't Man City. These are our rivals. Teams, in fact, that I'd argue all three of them we should be miles ahead of, miles, in terms of our resources and where we are as a footballing side. And these teams just look better than us. And that's a real concern for me about where our season's going. And Burnley's a massive game. You know, we'll play Newport tomorrow night. I thought Newcastle were excellent last week against Morecambe. They did right approach, right team, well played. We managed to take none of that into Saturday, which is a real concern. And that also feeds the idea that there just isn't really much going on behind the scenes. And I'd love to be proved wrong, but, you know, what are we, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 months into the job for Steve Bruce, and I still could not tell you how he wants his sides to play. Couldn't tell you. Apart from hit the ball long to Andy Carroll when he's in the team. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, the team doesn't have an identity. The players, like, you know, look at yesterday's first half performance and aspects of the second half performance. Look at the performance against Brighton. There are too many players out there who don't have a clue what they're supposed to be doing, and it needs sorted out. But the beautiful thing about football is there's always the next game, and we have a great chance against, I think, Burnley. Are they 19th, 20th? Yeah, lost 2 out of 2 Burnley so far this season. What an opportunity to put some of these things right, and we're heading to some tough games against Wolves and Manchester United with a little bit of hope. So, you know, all is not lost. The season isn't over yet, but Jesus Christ, it's hard work at times watching this football club play and watching this team play. Charlotte, you just want to talk about Carl Darlow a little bit more, and I realise I've not done that.
We keep saying, oh, we'll get to Carl Darlow. yeah, well, I mean, everybody knows what I'm going to say. I love Martin Dubravka. I think he's an incredible goalkeeper. But yesterday, Carl Darlow was absolutely on a par with him on a good day. Like, Spurs, as we've said, should have been 5-6-0 up at halftime. They did hit the post a couple of times, but Darlow made some incredible saves, including really early on, I think. There was a bit of a scuffle and he got the rebound as well. It looked a little bit tense. But not just that. I mean, he was the hardest working player on the pitch yesterday. He was absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I get what else to say. He was just excellent. And I'm really, you know, I'm quite bolstered by that, because I think having, you know, Martin Dubravka on our side is excellent. He's so good. And when we went, like when we were at West Brom in March for that cup game, I said that Darlow's good, but he sort of, you know, there are a lot of rebounds. He pushes it out and it comes back. There is still a little bit of that, but I think he's working so, so, so hard. He wants to prove. I think with the keepers, there's probably that really nice element of competition that we don't have in the rest of our squad, because we don't have the squad depth. That you do, like, you want Martin Dubravka to come to get back to full fitness and be like, actually, he's not going to be our first choice right now because Darlow's done so well. So I think, I think that sort of competition's fared really well for him within our squad. And he was just excellent yesterday.
Well said. I think that just about does it for our show today. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next Sunday, the day after the Burnley game. This week on Patreon, we have Andy Griffin on the preview. We have a post-match podcast straight after the game against Newport, and also a full review of, or preview even, of the Burnley game. Thanks for listening. Like I said, new issue of True Faith out. If you like Newcastle United, give it a go. That's the last I'll say on the matter for a week until the next show. Thanks to Charlotte and Ben. Hope we'll play better against Burnley next week. We can't play any worse. Cheers.